Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. Today we have this fabulous opportunity to talk to Liv Wheeler. Liv Wheeler is a shamanic practitioner. She is a bridge, a conduit of wisdom and guidance from the other side. Liv helps people to connect with their loved ones as well as spiritual guardians and allies on the other side. A realm that she is particularly connected with is the Contemplé realm, the dimension of the little people. She is a voice for the little people, a Contemplé voice diviner, transmitting their wisdom and guidance to people on this side. She does this through one-on-one phone sessions, as well as working with larger groups of people who gather to hear from the little people. Her passion is guiding others to remember their life's purpose and encourage them to step fully into it. Welcome, Liv. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Nika. It's so nice to meet with you.
This has been a wonderful connection. Liv has had quite an adventure in finding how she is a bridge, which includes a lot of travel and a lot of journeys. And I would just like to ask her to share from her heart how she stepped into her life's purpose.
Yeah, thank you for specifying from my heart, because my life's coming into my life's work has had a lot to do with learning how to follow my heart. So I could say basically I started out when I was younger, coming into a career path that was actually a court reporter, a stenographer. When I was in my early 20s, but that was when I was still kind of in heavy conditioning of the culture and, you know, my parents and whatnot. And so basically I learned what it feels like to walk a path or walk in shoes that are not mine. And I had, you know, that was really good learning for me. And it felt so kind of disturbing to my soul that I made the commitment to myself to really, you know, to find my own shoes, to walk in my own shoes. And so when I was 23, I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area and just followed, you know, began following my heart and listening to my heart and really committing to that and seeing where my heart guided me, you know, my heart and my intuition. And, you know, one thing led to another. And basically by following my intuition and by listening to my heart, then I was guided into a path of healing, basically, you know, going and studying many, many different forms of healing from, you know, like the denser layers of body work and yoga and into different forms of energy healing, Reiki and Hunan. And then going into the psychic spiritual, and it guided me basically, or I would say that was spirit that was guiding me into my path of, for lack of a better word, shamanic, you know, shamanic work, the shamanic path. And so that led me to a couple medicine teachers and then eventually to my primary teacher, Maladoma Somme. Yeah, and it's been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey.
How did you connect with Maladoma Somme, and what was that experience like? Can you talk a little bit about the context and what took you to him specifically? Because I think it's very interesting how we find our teachers or our guides or the people who lead us to the next step on our path.
Yeah, it was actually pretty interesting. So I was in this year-long training with a woman named Sylvia, this great teacher. She was really an awesome teacher. It was, you know, a shamanic training, and I loved it, and I wanted to continue. But she was really just taking people through 1 year of training, and at the end, she was telling the people in the group, if you're interested in going further, here's a list of books, you know, different shamans that you might be interested in reading. And for no particular reason, I guess just basically intuitive, I wrote down Maladama's book of Water and the Spirit. So I jotted that down, and it was, you know, basically intuitive. And I actually forgot to get the book. And then a couple weeks later, my friend Laurence from France had stopped by when I was living in Berkeley. And he and I went for a walk. We were walking to my friend Ajwa's house, and he started talking about this book that he was reading. And I was asking what the book was, and he was saying, oh, it's of Water and the Spirit. And I was like, wow, okay, this isn't a super common book. You know, it's like slightly obscure. And so I was like, oh, thank you for reminding me. I was wanting to get that book. And he said, oh, you probably could borrow from Ajwa. She found it on the street. And wow. That's whose house we were walking to. And so it kind of, you know, fell on my lap, so to speak. But I started reading the book, and I was completely, completely blown away. And I, you know, I tore through the book. I read it in maybe 2 days, and I just had this strong, strong feeling. I just knew I was meeting my teacher. And it was just a matter of like, where is he, you know, where is he located? And that's my teacher. And so, you know, I looked him up online, and I saw that he was teaching a 3-year training that would conclude in a trip to Burkina Faso. And anyway, it was just everything. Spirit was just fully, you know, there. That's your teacher. Go there. And so that began that journey, which, you know, after 3 years of working with him, he asked me to come back and assist. And so it was kind of like apprenticing for an additional four or five years after studying with him. So I was working with him for a while, and then, you know, going to Burkina Faso and working, just kind of immersing in the culture there and working with the different diviners and medicine people there in Burkina Faso.
That must have been a wonderful and life-changing experience.
That was definitely, yeah, that's definitely been a wonderful and life-changing experience. Seemingly, every time I go there, I absolutely adore the people of Burkina. I love the culture there so much. And, you know, it's so interesting coming from a culture, you and I were talking about this before, Nika, where, you know, here we are, at least in the mainstream culture here, that tries to behave as if spirit isn't real. And there I hop on a plane and I go into this other culture that's very, very rooted. And they've never come away from that understanding or that awareness. It's not a question, is spirit real? Everybody knows spirit is real. And they have these very rich practices that really they've never, you know, completely come uprooted, you know, they're super, super rooted traditions. So it's such, oh my gosh, it's such a gift to be able to spend time there. And I just soak it up, and it seems like it kind of wakes up the dormant memories, the dormant energies in my own system. And, so it's been so life changing, and I have such respect for the people there.
And how is it that you're a bridge? What is that? How does that work? I think there's a lot of us who are bridge people, but can you talk a little bit about?
Sure, yeah. And even you and I have talked about this a little bit, but even using the language, you know, shamanic or shamanism and all of that, you know, that means so many different things to so many different people. And my personal experience of being a bridge is, you know, there's some way that I'm wired where they talk to me. You know, when I say they, I mean ancestors and various spirits, they talk to me. And right now they're making my, you know, they're tingling my head. And so, you know, sometimes they get my attention through tingling my head, and it's basically, you know, they're coming in close with me right now as I'm talking to you. So I'll work with people, I do sessions, and sometimes they're doing a session because they want to be in touch with their ancestor or their parent or somebody that's on the other side. Sometimes, you know, that's the work that I'm doing with people. And then a lot of times these days, the work that I'm doing, or the kind of bridge that I'm being, is specifically with a realm or a dimension that's called the Kuntumle realm.
Mm-hmm.
That's the people of Burkina Faso, the Dagara people, the tribe that Maladoma comes from. That's their word, or that's their name for the little people. You know, the little people, like the little people in Ireland that would be named leprechauns, or in Hawaii that would be named the Menehune.
Yes.
So that's a realm or a dimension that I'm particularly close with. And so, like you were mentioning in your introduction of me, that I'm what's called a Kuntumle voice diviner. And so that's one way that I'm a bridge, and I bridge, or I link with that realm or that dimension of little people, that they have great wisdom. And so they'll look through my eyes at the person that I'm working with, and they'll tell that person things about their life and about their path. And like that.
I'd like to, you said they were tingling your head. I'd just like to welcome them anywhere mm-hmm. they'd like to participate. I'd like to acknowledge their presence and thank them for coming.
Thank you. Thank you as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I guess a couple of questions, because you work with a predominantly, I'm assuming a predominantly Western group of people, but people who are drawn to what it is that you do and may be brought to you by the Kuntumle.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find people respond to this? I mean, I'm sure there's a wide range.
Mm-hmm.
But what is this side of the bridge like for you? I know the other side is very, and we can talk about that too, a very joyous honor.
Right. So just to make sure I understand your question, you're asking how is it received by people on this side?
Right. And how, yeah. And how does that feel to you as a person, and how is it received? What do they come looking for?
Uh-huh.
How does it change their lives, perhaps?
You know, okay, so something I'll say, and it's a process that I'm in right now, where I sometimes wonder. Okay, so there's a couple of different ways that I divine in the Kuntumle voice divination. In my personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
If I could imagine being on the other side of it, the recipient, I feel like, you know, well, clearly you're having an experience with the other world. That's the way it feels to me, you know.
Right.
The Kuntumle, they come through and they're speaking in their own tongue, their own language. You know, it's an otherworldly experience. The other forms of divination that I do, where it's more like talking, you know, it's more maybe easier to digest in some ways, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not so confronting of our beliefs of whether the other world is real in the first place. So, you know, there's a whole variety of
reaction.
There's a whole variety of the ways that people receive it on the other side. hopefully, hopefully it goes well. And a lot of times it does. It does seem to be a profound experience for people. And sometimes, to be perfectly honest with you, I think it can be a little much for some people too. And that's why I say I'm in the process of wondering, perhaps there might be a step before this, before somebody's connecting with the Kontemple. It might be a bit easier to digest for somebody who already has some relationship or connection with the spirit world, where they already, understand that that's real. And then I feel like it's a little bit easier for that person to digest.
That's
Do you know
very beautiful. That's very beautiful. And to sort of prepare, almost as it were, prepare the ground for the seeds that the spirit world has to offer them. So it's not a shock. It's not like a thunderstorm. It's a...
Yeah, so I'm kind of in that process right now of thinking there might be, I feel like it's probably, it's a bit easier to digest for somebody who's already... has some sort of working connection with the spirit world, and and then yes, like that.
So did you? How do I say this? Did they talk to you before you knew who it was that was talking to you?
Yes.
Yes.
The Kontemple?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they talked to me before I knew who it was that was talking to me, and. It's been a rough learning. it's been kind of rough and tumble a little bit, because during the process, when I was a student of Maladoma's, for example, they I don't know how else to say this, they activated the stick for me, so I'm a stick diviner as well, and they move the stick in these various ways, and it's how they communicate. And they did that on their own. And then the first time I went to Africa, to Burkina Faso, and the first Kontemple diviner that I was sitting with, basically the Kontemple were coming through her and yelling at me. I get yelled at by them a lot. Because they were saying, here you are, you're using our tool and you're not giving us credit for it. Well... Okay, so Maladoma was the translator in this. Mm-hmm. The first person that I told when the stick, started working, so to speak, was I went to Maladoma and I said, they're kind of coming through the stick. Well, okay, so anyway, let's say it was a frustrating process. And so I'm apologizing to the Kontemple. Oh, I'm really sorry. Although I know you, I don't know you. And I'm doing my best here, I'm doing my best. And so in many ways, it's felt like, I'm in a dark room and I'm feeling around, and I'm feeling, oh, okay, I'm putting my hands in front of me and, oh, there's something there. And so, in some ways, I've felt like that a lot of the time, like I'm feeling my way in the dark. And I haven't, although Maladoma has definitely been, my predominant teacher and everything, but he gives a lot of space for people to figure things out on their own, so it's been, in some ways, it's been a challenging path, really, in ways, and I'm a baby in the path, I'm a baby, meaning it's a lifetime learning. That's the way I see it. It's a lifetime of learning or a lifetime of remembering. And I'm just a baby on the path. But I'm doing my best.
Well, I think, too, that there's that place that they... that it's also a different experience for spirit to talk to people who don't have the rituals and the language with people. So I think that was kind of... I'm realizing now part of that question about how is it received. It's like, how do you honor them with people who don't even know that they're there.
So true.
And that puts you in a very interesting position. And here you are, a responsive and eager recipient, and at the same time, not knowing, coming from a culture where you don't talk about those things,
yeah.
How do you honor them?
It's so true. Yeah, I really appreciate your question. It's like, it makes me feel sad in my heart really a little bit, because in a way, it's like they don't have a place in this culture. Do you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I mean, they've been relegated to fairy tales and everything else, and they're real, and they're mighty. You know, they're very powerful. And it really makes me sad, because it's as if there's not a place for them. And so I feel so grateful when I get to work with people who do honor them,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and even if they don't really understand them, they still honor them. And I feel so grateful when I get to work with people like that. It's like my heart can just sigh. You know, or my heart can just exhale, like, oh, that feels so good. And, you know, I was working with a native, was a friend. I was working with him the other day, and I say native because that's the background, or that's the context that he's drawing from. So even though it's here, same land, right? We're both
mm-hmm.
walking on the same land, but completely different cultural experiences. And he himself, you know, had worked with the little people. They would have a different name for them
mm-hmm.
For 10 years. So he already had a working connection with them. So that already I could like exhale. He had never experienced them in the way that they connect, you know, through me, where they're talking, you know, specifically in their language and their tongue. And so they were, you know, they were coming through and they were working with him, or they were, you know, telling him things. And afterwards, after the session was complete, he was asking me, he was surprised in a way that, you know, for one, that it could all happen over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And for another, he was asking me in a very sincere way, like, how are you doing this in our culture? A medicine person, or a person who's carrying medicine similar to this, would have, you know, gatekeepers and, you know, these different roles, and, you know, people tending various gates spiritually so that you can do what you do. And he was asking me that, and I didn't have an answer. And I don't have, you know, because it's again where I feel like I'm kind of feeling around in the dark, you know, where I don't have an answer. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm doing my best. So that's a different, you know, that's a person who has already a context, you know, he's coming from a context,
right.
A framework. Anyway.
So my understanding of that is those of us that they, send out to do that kind of work, Liv.
Mm-hmm.
They retain the responsibility of gatekeeper, depending on the quality of heart.
Mm-hmm.
So that, because it's a very new world for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that what you're doing here is introducing to people the reality of this, and the option of doing this, and the experience of doing this at their behest. And so since it's at their behest, they are doing the protective work.
Mm-hmm. 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 You know, I appreciate what you say, Nika, about it's a very new world. I appreciate that. I was thinking about that this morning. Yeah, here we are. We're in a new world. Yeah, it's a new world. Yeah, I really appreciate that. That strikes a chord with me, or that resonates from what I'm feeling right now too, that it's this you know, there's like a cultural convergence. And, you know, and there's something interesting too that I will say about the Kentongle is that they, okay, so there's two sides of the coin. One side of the coin is, so I've heard the original stories of the little people, so I've heard is that they're kind of like the originators. You know, they were some of the first people. They're mm-hmm. ancient, right? And they were, so I've heard, it's almost like the bringers of tradition, of, you know, of what would be like the textiles or the patterning, the songs. They're the originators of tradition. So this is interesting because, and a friend and I were actually doing a lot of research into, you know, the stories of the little people around the globe, you know, mm-hmm. just, we're doing a lot of research right now. So, and what I have experienced from a personal or a direct experience of the Kentongle is that they are, I always want to say like they're at the cutting edge, you know, they're at the cutting edge. They're gonna always bring change.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I want to say it. They're going to always bring change. And so it's interesting. There's something in there with what you just said about this, like this new world that we're living in. And yeah, it's somehow unformulated in myself right now because I can just sense it. But it's somehow where all these waves are coming together, and there's a role that the Kentongle have in this as well. It's unformulated because this is the first time that I'm really touching into the energy with you.
And I have learned through my life that they have done this many times, taught humans how to talk to them. Mm. And so I think it was interesting because when you were talking about your experience in the Dogara tribe of Burkina Faso, mm. in that cultural context, you were expected to know and be able to honor them. And so the whole new role of doing it, so there you're in one culture and then in another culture, how is that expressed? We don't have those rituals in whatever it is we're trying to create in this world now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's the first time that's happened.
Can you say a little more about that?
That was very interesting. I don't usually share this level of stuff, but...
Well, I felt like I wanted to hear...
Yeah, so I was told... they're telling me it's okay to talk about it. So I was told by my spirit guides when there was some conflict with a specific culture, they were like, you belong to us. Mm-hmm. We have work for you.
Mm-hmm.
We were here before they came, mm-hmm. and we will be here after they have gone.
Oh.
We have work for you.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, then please teach me how to do it. So that there are connections with them that are possible outside of the specific cultural contexts. And how do we do that respectfully, respecting the culture and respecting the Kentongle and what they have to say? So I think...
Yes.
But that took me asking them for that information because my experience is that they're a little dismissive of the intricacies of human culture.
That's a nice way to say it. That's a nice way to say it. Okay, this reminds me of, okay, so, all right, okay. The Kentongle, all right, okay. They're telling me many things at once. Okay, the Kentongle, all right, they come from the stars. Yeah, they come from the stars, and they come through elements. You know, they come through like mountains and, trees and caves and sometimes water, you know. So sometimes people call them elemental beings because they, you know, they come through the portals of these elements. They were telling me recently they want a series of rituals at ancient trees. So the first one will likely happen in August of next year, and will, you know, converge at an ancient tree that I've heard about that's in Washington. And I'm basically just following Quintumle's guidance on all of this. And, you know, they're asking people to gather there, and it'll likely be a 2-day ritual connecting with this ancient tree and seeing, you know, what messages are wanting to come through. And then there's, and so we're also wanting to understand who the native people are there, mm-hmm. and respect, you know, respectfully approach the land there and the people there, the guardians there, and ask permission, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. ask permission and also respect the little people that the little people of that region, because mm-hmm. they are different in different regions. So there's a whole process that we're, you know, kind of going into to honor the land that we're walking on, and honor the beings, and honor, you know, to try to do it as respectfully as possible.
It's very beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, I guess I haven't, you asked about the bridge, and I've kind of touched on it a little bit, and I haven't totally expressed how they come through. So I've, you know, said that they come through in their language or in their tongue. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and sometimes that's how or why it can be a shocking experience for somebody who's on the receiving end of it. Mm-hmm. Well, you and I have worked together before. How was it for you?
It was very tender.
Tender.
Because it's not unusual for me, and so one of the things about having lived in different cultures, when you started talking about when they came to you and you started talking about the little people, and you said, so I have heard, there's a whole different linguistic structure in how this information gets communicated, because it's not language dependent, and it's not, in my experience, it's not, especially not English, because English is subject, verb, object, which has very little to do with my understanding of reality. So it was very, it struck me as being very magical and very sacred. But mm-hmm. I think to people who are not comfortable with new experiences or aware of the range of reality, it can be disconcerting, especially if they're trying to understand with their rational mind, mm-hmm. which is going back to the culture that said, this doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I feel very honored that mm-hmm. they actually talk through you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I feel honored that they're willing to talk through me as well, because that's showing their trust. Mm-hmm. And what I've experienced of the Quintumle is they are, to be perfectly honest, they're apprehensive of like modern humans. They're very, you know, I feel like that's why they don't show themselves oftentimes to modern humans, is they're very apprehensive, because what they say to me is they say, we're very grabby. We're very grabby creatures. As humans, I don't exclude myself from that. I'm also quite grabby. Yeah. It can be grabby too. They're just, you know, they give me some leeway to be grabby now and then. But yeah, I feel honored that they, you know, that they show up and that they're willing to, I feel, you know, bless me in that way, because I feel blessed through the process, and I feel like, you know, I'm able to experience a whole new reality every time I go into that space with them. And just to, I mean, I'll attempt to explain. So basically, yeah, the Kontomle, I keep touching at this. They communicate through in their mother tongue or in their native tongue. And that process, so it sounds high-pitched. It has this high-pitched quality to it. And the very kind of like a speedy frequency a speedy frequency. And the process, sometimes people ask me like how did it get to the point where I'm able to do that, to like to be that channeler voice. And it was a process for sure. I would say I would call that an initiation for sure, that started in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I worked with the diviners there, and they gave me herbs, you know, to put on myself, and I would wrap myself in like white cloth every night. And I had these bells that I'd ring, their call to the Kontomle. And there wasn't really like a guidebook or anything. It was just like, just work with the medicine, you know? And so I did daily, put the medicine on, and, you know, I went into this process daily. And then when I would be in ritual space, or when I'd be connecting with spirit, these shrilly sounds started coming out of my throat, really disturbing sounds. Luckily, I shared a house with a woman who also did healing work and did spiritual work. So I would go in the kitchen and apologize to her. She was like, "Oh, that's okay." Luckily, there was some, you know, some, it was okay in that space, but these very disturbing, you know, like shrilly, like, you know, sounds were coming out. And this was, you know, this was a process. It was like months and months and months. And they were, now I understand, they were basically working my vocal cords, preparing me to, so that they were able to talk, communicate through in their language. And finally they stretched my vocal cords enough that they were able to, like, the language happened. And that was surely, I could feel it. That was definitely their language. That's them talking. And then there, you know, and then it took a little bit of time still to be able to understand what they were saying. You know, the language was coming through, and it took some time. And there was a moment that felt like a switch turned on, or the light switch, you know, turned on, and all of a sudden I could understand what they were saying. And so they would talk through me, the language would come through, and then all of a sudden I was like, oh shoot, okay, you're saying, and I would say it back to them. And if I got it right, they were like, yes, you know, like, geez, what took you so long? God, yeah, I'm slow, I guess. And then if I got anything incorrect, they would be sure to say, no, that's not what we're saying. And, you know, and so in my experience in the Kontomle, they're teachers of, you know, precision. They want things to be precise. You know, they don't let me cut corners or anything like that. And so when they're communicating through me to another person in a session, they'll make sure that every word, the way that I translate it, is just how they meant it, you know, precise. And then sometimes I'll go back and I'll listen to what they've shared, sometimes with a group, and I'll think that it's funny wording. Like, why did they say it like that? That's interesting wording. And then when I spend some time with the wording, I realize, oh, Okay, that's kind of deep. And even though they'll seem like very simple words, it works. You know, there were speaking to a group one time, it was a ceremony, and they were bringing through messages for the group, and they were saying over and over, play is pray and pray is play. They kept saying that over and over, play is pray and pray is play. And their whole message, that kind of session, was about, you know, that spiritual work doesn't have to be so grueling, and it doesn't have to feel like you're getting singed. You know, it doesn't have to be so painful. And that was their specific message to that group. And so they kept saying, like, play is pray and pray is play. And thought, huh, that's interesting. And it kind of works.
Well, and reflects a very different understanding of our relationship to beings we pray to. That they're interested in our joy. But yeah, the issue of language is very interesting, and I find it fascinating because they're speaking in their language and getting you to translate it and getting it accurate, and it's really fabulous.
Do you work with language a lot? I mean, do you study language?
I study how people talk and what people say a lot, and how do you say things, because my way of hearing them is nonverbal.
Right. Does it come to you through, like, well, direct experience, just feeling?
Yeah, through I don't know how else to call it, live through knowing. Knowingness. Suddenly they, and then you like struggle to bring it into focus, and then I struggle to bring it into focus, or I struggle to put it into language. Sometimes, and other times, really struggle to know it without putting it into language.
I like what you say too, that direct know, you know, that inner knowing, that quality. I've had the pleasure of experiencing it only a couple times, where something goes directly into my inner knowing. I feel like it's only just happened a couple times, but and I feel that with you. I feel it's so beautiful to be connected in that way, where it just. And it's so different from, you know, like the know-it-all energy, or I know. That's a completely different thing when it goes directly into your inner knowing, and you just know, like, you know from the inside. And that's wonderful that you're connected in that way.
Yeah, it took me a while to understand. Not everybody gets those regular downloads
No, it doesn't happen with everybody.
orders. Here, this is
No,
what you're doing next. I was like,
it
okay.
doesn't. No, you're a potent woman for sure. You know, and it's something I want to say too, when you're talking about living your bliss, and, you know, this kind of people, yeah, it's touching on people's path, their individual and their unique paths and their purpose. And something I will say that it's one of my favorite things about working with people is when people are wanting to look at their life's path or their life's purpose or that sort of stuff. I find so exciting to look at their unique gifts and everything, because, okay, clearly, we're limited in our human capacity. You know, I always say, like, you know, our eyes are too small. We have small eyes as humans, and we have very little eyes. Spirit's eyes are much bigger than ours. And it can be humbling, and it can also be relieving too. We don't have to have it all figured out. And there are these greater pools of wisdom, these greater sources of knowledge on the other side, spirit. You know, call it great spirit, call it kontomle, call it angel, you know, whomever we work with, that seem to have you know, have a way of looking into our soul and knowing what the heck we're doing here when we ourselves so easily forget what we're doing here. It's so easy to forget what we're doing here.
Yes.
Yes.
To get caught up in the grabbiness.
Yeah, acquiring and ownership and for sure.
So you mentioned that you do other kinds of divination. So do you want to talk about those a little bit?
Sure. So I mentioned a little bit the stick divining, and that's one way I divine also. That essentially it's interesting. In the spirits, they taught me how to, let me be clear, contemplate. Let it be known, contemplate taught me. So it's interesting. It's like a small stick that I work with, and they basically use it like a pen. So my eyes are closed when I'm divining in this way, and they'll write the first letter of every word. So if they're saying, you know, Nika is connected to spirit, that would be NICTS. Mm-hmm. And so my eyes are closed. I have the stick, and it's kind of being used like a pen. And that's how they open up my channels. So while they're writing the first letter of every word, the words will start going across my mind's eye. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I'm divining in that way. Usually, that's how I'll start to connect more. You know, when somebody is wanting to talk directly to their ancestors, and that's really the focus of the session. Is they want to talk to, you know, a very specific loved one on the other side or something like that. So so it basically happens through stick divining. And this stick divining, and then also, you know, working with the ancestors. I'm mostly doing both, through the working directly with the stick. And that is, and that can be, I feel, much gentler in ways, for sure. You know, it's a gentler process where it's more like, you know, I'm talking, you're talking. It's not feeling too, you know, jolting to or confronting to the Western psyche, I don't think.
That's wonderful, because I think that sometimes there's a stage where the gentle invitation is really important to people to build the connection.
I feel like that's very true. I'm learning as I go along, for sure.
Well, I think that's true the whole time that anyone does this practice.
That it's a constant learning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you and I had talked about this the other day too, Nika. Is something I would like to touch on too. That is, it is a constant learning. And also, my personal approach to it too is to always be engaged in my own personal healing. In whatever form that takes at the time. You know, you and I had talked about like shadow work and things like that. Yes. And we're, you know, constantly working my own healing as a, you know, as a fragile human being who has, you know, who experiences it all, you know, who experiences like jealousy, envy, anger, like all these things, that qualities that you and I had talked about, and to just, you know, keep working my side of things too, you know, so that hopefully the channel can be as clear as possible.
Yeah, I think that's very true, that in order to communicate clearly, we have to be so clean ourselves and really always look and you know, come into. I think that's part of the whole role of ceremony and ritualizing, is to bring your best self. You know, and to consciously know that medicine time is not a time to be acting out of anger or envy or smallness. And that is how we stumble in the world, is when we allow that part of the human. I think that there's a whole interesting thing about the human experience, and we allow that part of the human experience to dominate, as opposed to the fabulous creative energy that lives in flow.
Yeah. An approach I take also is, and something I'm so fond of, is just sheer vulnerability. With the way that I approach whenever I'm working with groups or going into ritual space and everything, I'll almost like, you know, give that disclaimer when I'm talking to people before working together, is to say, you know, I really welcome vulnerability and, you know, really invite that energy in. Because I feel like that's a way that it's just, you know, it's acknowledging our humanity, and also I feel like it's a way of exorcising the community shadow. Makes sense?
Yes.
That we keep exorcising it to say, I'm really scared right now. You know, I feel so nervous. I mean, that's not my personal experience right now, but to have space to say that, like, oh, I feel very inadequate or whatever, you know, that it's just, I mean, do we not all experience that? I mean, maybe regularly, you know, feelings of inadequacy or feelings of, you know, envy, or you have something that I want or whatever, you know, it's like our human experience. But to be able to bring that to the table, and to bring that to the table with spirit, you know, to say, you know, here we are in our like naked selves, being honest, really being honest about what's really going on. And I feel like that that can continue to like mulch those energies, lest they become a very present energy in the space.
That's so beautifully put.
Thank you. Thank you. And I've been so touched by people, you know, they'll show up and they're, you know, in their grief and their, you know, and people really, really getting raw together. And I feel like we can go that much deeper with spirit when we're just, you know, peeling away, you know, taking off our masks and, you know, letting the layers fall away and fall away and falling away and loving each other through it. It's like, I will still love you. You know, I'll still love you. You can tell me all these parts about yourself and I'll still love you because I have those parts too. And, you know, and I'm showing up as a, like a hobbling, you know, hobbled, you know, human being. I'm not somebody who has it together at all.
Well, and that we share that and are compassionate instead of turning on each other is so powerful.
Yeah, we like can just love each other through it. We can totally love each other through it.
And I think that's a choice. And it's a choice we make in every moment. And I feel that those places, very often when the jealousy or the envy or the feeling excluded shows up, it's parts of ourselves that don't feel loved. And I often offer those up to the spirit. To versions of the contemplé to say, here's a part of me that needs healing. It needs love.
Yes. The part of us that needs love. And it's taking a risk, you know, it's for sure taking a risk to bring those, you know, to the table, so to speak, in community, because we could get rejected again and it could feel, you know, as painful as the first time it happened. It's taking a risk for sure. You know, we take a risk each time, but it's so beautiful when people in community collectively are willing to take that risk and just love each other through it. So it can be really, really a profound healing for everybody present, you know, that we can accept each other and love each other in our humanity.
Yes. Because that's the given in this life.
Yeah. Yeah, we're these curious creatures.
Yes.
We're very curious creatures, aren't we?
We are both in all the definitions of that word.
We really are so curious, aren't we?
So I know that you experience being challenged and corrected, but do you also feel being loved by the contemplé?
Oh yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that feeling? Because I think that that's such a healing. I don't even not experience, but beingness, or I don't know how to say that.
Oh yeah, it melts my heart just to feel into the energy. It could make me weep just feeling into it. I know they love me so much, and I love them so much. They source from love for sure. They source from love for sure. So even within the lessons and the learning and everything, there's such profound love behind all of that, and I don't have to, you know, feel too deeply in to feel that, it's heart melting kind of love. And I just, it, you know, like I said, if I really allow myself to feel a little more deeply into the energy right now, I would just start weeping. It's really, really, really precious. They source from love for sure, and they have such love for humanity, really, they do. And they have, you know, even more than humanity, they have such love for the earth. They have such love for the earth, and they have such love for the beings of the earth, and they love the earth so much. And a lot of the guidance and the guidance that they bring me, especially lately, is in service to the earth, really. And they love people. They absolutely, they source from love for sure.
And that's a wonderful place to have your guidance from.
And they're fun too.
They are.
I have a good time with them because they make me laugh. They're really funny. A lot of times they're really funny. They'll crack me up, and sometimes they crack themselves up too. You know, sometimes they're laughing at themselves, and you know, the other person on the receiving end is just not even knowing what's going on because we're just laughing hysterically. They're fun. They live in joy. And, you know, I think if I remember correctly, I heard Maladoma talk about the contemplé. Well, he talks about the contemplé a lot in his books and in various ways. And if I remember correctly, he was saying that much of the joy of his people is attributed to the contemplé. Yeah. The contemplé. It's a very joyful energy. And when I feel like, I had the pleasure of working with an awesome contemplé woman the last time when I was in Africa. And she, to me, was just the epitome of really healthy contemplé energy. That she was so sweet and so loving, as so sweet and so loving, and just in that sweetest, like honey loving energy. And you know, where it just comes through the eyes and just, you know, kind of welcome me like family. And you know, she was in there singing the songs and playing the music for contemplé, and it was such precious, just beautiful, beautiful, loving energy, and so joyful.
What a gift.
Yeah, it was like, you know, feeling like getting cradled in the mother's arms or something, just, you know, where you kind of want to hang out there for a long time.
Yeah, my grandfather always used to say when he saw people being erroneous in their life path, said, "Oh, those poor people. They don't know any better. It's up to us to show them the right way."
Oh, that's lovely.
And I just thought that was such a beautiful approach. And when you... Go ahead.
Oh, no, please. I was just saying that's lovely.
And when you were talking about her, I thought, what a fabulous mentor and model of how to be in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and to see somebody, to be physically present in the field of someone who lives from that space.
Oh, yeah.
It's such an honor, and for us to try and touch back into that and manifest it when we're most scared or most unsure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful. And something that was also beautiful to me there in that village was she and these other women there, and some children, there were a lot of women in the village. It was basically like all day, it seemed like, that they were in preparation, creating this meal. Who was the meal for? Kuntumle. The whole thing was for Kuntumle. Really, really beautiful. So touching. This delicious, and they were all preparing it together. It was for Kuntumle. That is so beautiful.
Oh, wonderful.
Really touching.
What a beautiful image. So we are coming near the end of our time, Liv. So if you would like to give out your website and talk about any upcoming events and how people can find you, that would be really wonderful.
Sure, definitely. Okay, so my website is ancestorbridge.com. Yeah, just like that, ancestorbridge.com. And yeah, I have some different events coming up. In Florida, in the middle of January, I have a women's ritual retreat that's happening in High Springs, Florida, January 1st and 2nd. There's a retreat, another women's retreat happening in Mississippi. That's yoga, meditation, some spiritual nourishment. And let's see, what else do I have coming up? There's another women's ritual retreat happening in High Springs, Florida, again in mid-February, that I'm collaborating with a woman named Dr. Kat Coder. And then coming up after that, let's see, there's going to be an ancestralization in Vermont in May, and there's going to be an ancestralization in Oregon in July. There's other things too. They can find it on the website. There's lots of good things brewing.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. And I'd just like to take a moment to thank the Kuntumble for honoring us with their presence today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they appreciate that for sure. That's nice. Thank you, Nika. Thank you for taking the time, and thank you for your medicine and your wisdom that you just so clearly walk with and be. You are that. It's an honor to know you.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you for what you do here. It's a great work.
Thank you.